You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me, as always, is...
Tristan Riddell.
And Tristan, I know that you always say you're excited about what we're going to talk about every week, but this week I think you are super excited. Yes?
Yes, I am. I am super excited because we are doing a commentary on Season 2, Episode 6, Twisted. Now, this is not a beloved fan favorite. This is
not by any means. No.
No. No. I don't think people particularly hate this episode. It's not like it's a threshold or a fight or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, or anything. No, not anywhere close. But it slips through the cracks. It's not a memorable episode to a lot of people because it's a bottle show. Let's say that up front.
Well, yeah, it's a bottle show, but I love bottle shows. Like, I don't know why people complain all the time, because I love it when they're self-contained, they're on the ship, because to me, that's where I want to be. I want to be on the ship. You know, I want them to go and see, you know, fantastic things and go on fantastic voyages. But, you know, all in all, like ship is their home, and a lot of the times for us Star Trek fans, ship is our home as too.
That's right. Yeah, I don't know if I really mind bottle shows so much. I think maybe on occasion they do show the reason why they tend to do bottle shows, which is they have run out of money. And so it's not quite the quality that we've come to expect week in and week out. But in terms of writing, there's still plenty that you can do just on the ship. So there's still a lot to love there. And we're going to tackle this one with a commentary. And I'm very excited because... you love this episode, and I don't by any means hate it. I don't know if it's as high on the list, on my list, as it is on yours, but I certainly do enjoy it. I really do.
Yeah, this is very high on my list. And for those of you who don't remember, this is what Netflix says. And it says, Voyager encounters a non-corporeal, sentient, space-dwelling life form, which is interested in learning more about the ship and its people.
Yes. So, we'll give you a countdown, and now would be a good time to cue up your Netflix, or however you want to do this. 3, 2, 1, go. All right.
So, this is the first shot besides the ship. The first shot besides the ship is Kes just walking through the corridors. Now, people, if you haven't seen this episode before, you're going to see a lot of walking in corridors.
Hey, foreshadowing. That's so true. I hadn't thought about it.
A lot of people who don't like this episode talk about the pacing, and I cannot argue with that. Like, there is a very lethargic pace to this episode.
Right.
One of the reasons why they did that is because they ran out of, like, they finished 8 minutes early. Like, they needed to film, like, once they were done filming, they're like, oh, holy crap, we're 8 minutes short on a full episode.
Yeah, that's a substantial amount of time. Usually, if anything, don't productions run over?
Yeah, most TV episodes, they run long.
I imagine they do, because I remember, like, every other Office commentary for The Office, they always talk about how much they had to chop off the block, and they'd even do extended episodes and still have to trim a whole lot of fat off and put it on the DVDs later on. I think that for 8 minutes short, that is absolutely huge. What went wrong with the script there? That's what I want to know.
You know, like, it's so strange because, like you said, you know, like, 8 minutes is such a wide margin. And, yeah, they do, you know, go over most of the time. And most of the times, you know, a TV episode, you know, will have deleted scenes because you usually try to shoot more than you can because you can always excise. It's easier to leave things on the cutting room floor than it is to go back and shoot them. So I don't know how they could have done this, but they just overestimated how long things were going to take, or I don't know what it was, but they had to film more corridor scenes, more walking scenes. And Jerry Taylor said that the scenes between the doc and Sandrine, like when Sandrine was flirting with the doc, those were added in.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, see, I thought it was just a bunch of extra corridor scenes where they're walking around and walking around some more and then walking around even more or having more mishaps where, as we'll see with Torres later on, things of that nature. So, okay, that's interesting.
Those definitely were added in, but those weren't the only things that were added in.
I see. Now, tell me something. If you had a purple Javalian fudge cake for your birthday, does that look appetizing to you?
Oh, absolutely. Because yeah? Out of everything, out of every Star Trek dessert that we've ever seen, this is the cake I want.
Yeah, I mean, it's very kind of like space-like. You know what I mean? Where yeah. It looks futuristic, it looks space age, it's purple, it kind of has a nice metallic sheen to it.
Kind of looks like it's a nebula.
Yeah, it does.
Now, what's that one in Next Gen with mint frosting? The one that's like...
It's cellular peptide
cake. There you go, cellular peptide cake.
With mint frosting.
With mint frosting.
Yeah, I love the way he says that as he takes a bite.
I love that.
Yeah, it's... Go ahead.
I love that we have... there's a lot of things that we don't have anymore in the future. You know, like, it's a... There's no TV. Doesn't seem like there's any movies. You know, that they all get replaced by things. But, you know, like, Picard taught us that there are still books. But I love that there are still presents in the future.
Yes. And there are still lockets.
Still lockets, apparently.
With photographs.
And when is she going to wear that? You know?
And she never does.
That's what's really funny, because we always see, like, I guess besides Kes, but like most of the time in Star Trek, whenever we see people get jewelry as a gift, my first question is always, when are they going to wear that? Because we always see them in just their uniforms.
Right. Apparently it's against regulation to wear a whole lot of jewelry because they're not going around on the bridge wearing this stuff. And we don't see them doing it on their free time either. Yeah. Like that locket. That's in the second episode. Is it Resistance?
Yeah.
I think that's... Resistance, I think. With the one with Joel Grey.
Yeah.
Where Janeway gets the locket at the end and she... The episode ends with her just kind of holding it. Mm-hmm. She never wears that again.
Now, one piece of jewelry that Catherine did wear while she was on duty, even though it was extraneous circumstances, was the pocket watch that Chakotay got for her in Year of Hell.
Yes, in Year of Hell. Ugh. And such a good moment. Very, very apt. Yes. One thing I do love about Twisted is we did get to see Kes's 2-year birthday party. How many birthdays, really, do we see on Star Trek? We see a few, and they're scattered few and far between. For Kes, though, this is a really big freaking deal because she has such a short lifespan. So I thought it was really cute.
Yeah, she only gets, what, 8?
She lives, I think their average lifespan is 9 years.
9 years, that's right, 9 years.
So I guess the way I've always seen it is every year for an Okampan is about 10 human years.
Right.
So this is roughly her 20th birthday.
Now, whose birthdays did we see? We saw Tuvok's when he hit triple digits.
Yeah. That...
Who else was there?
Besides Janeway in the watch, we might have not seen any others on Voyager.
Yeah, I'm blanking right now. Folks, if we're wrong, please, yeah, write in. Let us know.
Yeah. Still love the Voyager opening sequence. It's so pretty.
Yeah.
It's not aged.
No.
It's still gorgeous.
Yeah, there's something about how tactile it is that I'll never forget and never not appreciate.
Indeed. Now, I've said this before, but I'll say it again. I really love Sandrines. It just feels cozy to me.
Not to me. I've never had the attachment to Sandrines that you have had.
Yeah, I don't get it. I kind of like the ambiance. It's kind of little intimate lighting. It's not an overly huge place, but it's not teeny. It's just cozy enough to where you can sit back and get a drink and enjoy yourself, relax, play a game of pool if you want.
Hmm. That leans a little bit to the east.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, poor Tuvok and Harry stuck on the bridge while everybody else is partying.
Yeah.
What did they do to get that short end of the stick?
Well, somebody's got to run the bridge. I was reading that Tim Russ liked the intro of this episode because it shows that Tuvok's kind of getting used to his crew, and you know, like by season two, he's feeling a little bit more comfortable, and he's by showing that he tells Harry that he can go to the party without saying to Harry that he can go to the party, and I thought that was really interesting from a character's perspective. Yeah,
yeah, that's true, and I suppose as the disciplined Vulcan, birthdays are illogical. Although he does look kind of miffed that he's there.
Well, that's just his face.
Aw.
He has resting Vulcan face.
I like that. There you go. That's true. You know, actually, that is a thing. T'Pol has that too, definitely.
That needs to be a thing. That needs to be a thing in the Star Trek community. Yeah.
Resting Vulcan face? Well, it is from here on out. You coined it. We're using it.
Yeah. RVF.
RVF.
Fantastic. I'm glad that we don't see this guy anymore.
Yeah, you don't like him?
No, this guy has always bugged me. Like, I know he's kind of supposed to. Like, when we first see him, it's because he's being a jerk to the doc.
Yeah.
And I know we're not supposed to like him. But it was just so funny when he says, I think we see him later on when he's like, yeah, I didn't know the environmental controls were going all wonky because I was just working out so hard. And I'm like, I don't care.
You know what? That's all that guy does. Is he works out, and then he injures himself and has to go to sick bay, and then he's a jerk to the doc. I mean, I think that's all he did for the whole 7 years.
Yeah.
He got tennis elbow for 7 years.
On Next Gen, like, that's pretty much all that O'Brien had to do was he just dislocated his shoulder constantly.
Right. Everybody has their specific injury that they get.
This is one of the first times we see the green-eyed monster rear its ugly head.
Yeah, it's very prevalent in this episode, and the writers were very conscious of this, and they realized they really could be screwing things up if they didn't resolve this storyline very quickly, in terms of Neelix's character. So even though they wrote themselves into this, they realized they had to get out of it pretty quickly, which is why we had Partuition pretty close after this.
Yeah, and as much as I don't like jealous Neelix, because jealousy is so ugly in real life as it is on screen, I'm glad that it resulted in catharsis. I'm glad that we got Parturition from this.
Yes, I am glad that they resolved it. They resolved it well, and hopefully grew a little bit from the experience. One thing that did occur to me about Neelix, and I want to know your thoughts on this, is do you think that Kes is the first you know, lady that he's ever really loved? You know, is this a first love kind of a thing? And that's why maybe the jealousy is so prevalent. I mean, you would think for a guy his age, he's had several loves, but maybe not, because he's been just kind of all over the place his whole life.
Well, in my headcanon, I always imagined him as being kind of a cad when he was younger. Like, he has a lot of cool skills. You know, he can cook. And, you know, like, I feel like he could woo a lot of the ladies because of those skills. And so, like, when he was a teenager, he was all around town. But, you know, like, not love or anything like that. Really just, you know, he was just... You know,
just showing off for the ladies.
Yeah, just showing off for the ladies. But then once he lost his family and his sister and everything like that, I could see him becoming a hermit for a long time and, like, kind of, you know, not having interaction with a lot of people, and especially not romantic interaction until he found Kes. So I could see that. Yeah.
That's going in my head canon. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Which would explain kind of the immaturity of his level of jealousy.
Oh, yeah. Kes. Absolutely.
Because that's how I see it. Jealousy is an immature emotion, especially in terms of love.
I know I say this all the time, folks, but I miss how prominent B'Elanna's ridges are in seasons 1 and 2.
Yeah, well, and we'd been watching some season 5 recently for the podcast, and I can see a pronounced difference between what we've been watching lately and this episode right here. Now, they filmed this as a part of season one toward the very end, and this is a bottle show because they were running out of money. And I wasn't sure about that, so I consulted Memory Alpha because I thought, well, wouldn't all these special effects cost a lot of money? Actually, they were just very time-consuming, according to the production or visual production manager.
Well, that's where the money of the episode would go, is the special effects in this episode.
Because they didn't have to build any extra sets or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. Still, I just thought, well, you know, CGI being so new, I wonder if that really cost him a pretty penny.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, it probably still did, but they still ended up saving money anyway.
Yes. Yes. I always forget how much hair he actually had in the first couple seasons.
Bob Picardo?
Yeah, Picardo. Yeah, he always has a little bit thicker hair in the back.
It goes, yeah, it's a little higher on his head. He's not quite Sticks got the out. Jean-Luc going yet.
No, no.
Yes.
One thing that I never really quite understood and something that always kind of bothered me was control panels in the holodeck.
Uh-huh. What about them?
Well, here, we see this all the time. But, like, I think there was one episode when, you know, like, I can't remember which show it was, but, like, somebody walks in and they're like, you know what, I think the control panel should be behind these books over here. And you're like, how the hell would you know that? You've never ran this program before. You have no idea where you are. And there's, like, the holodeck's constantly moving. There are no real walls.
Right. And,
but in Voyager especially, they do this where, instead of, like, calling an arch, like they do in, you know, Generations, they're like, computer arch, you know?
Yeah.
They find a console by moving something around in the holodeck, like removing a boulder or, you know, moving some books or something like that. And that's always bothered me.
Right. Yeah. How do you know that's where it is?
Yeah. There's no such thing as a permanent fixture in a holodeck.
Yeah. You make a good point. It's, of course, it's just a plot device to move things along.
Well,
but
yeah, but they could just say computer
it,
arch.
It's going to bother the heck out of me. Thanks.
I left Neelix. He's like, why do you know where all these people's quarters are? What's the deal?
Yeah, because when you're walking down the quarters, you apparently don't look at the names on the doors of other people as you pass them by. Apparently he doesn't.
Like, it's always so funny because on the few times we actually do get a close-up of the door, there are actually people's names on the door.
Yes.
But they're insanely hard to read. Like, the lettering is really smooshed together.
It really is. So as you're walking by, I mean, it would be kind of hard to say, oh, okay, yeah, that one's Ayala's quarters, this one's Kyoto's quarters, unless you actually stop and take a minute to look. Where am I?
That always felt so forced to me whenever they called each other Starfleet and Maquis. Did that feel forced to you?
Oh, at this point, no. Now, if they were saying it anything outside of maybe a term of endearment in season six, yes. But they did kind of let that go pretty soon after this, didn't they? I mean, they kind of stopped, right?
Yeah, they let it go, but they did revive it a couple more times. Like, there was one time when B'Elanna and Harry were trapped inside a lift. And
oh, yeah.
And they called each other that, and then they were...
Trivia.
Yeah, 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 they were doing trivia. And, Seven of Nine saved them.
Right. Yeah, I suppose... But that, I think, was more an endearing, you know, kind of little jab kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying it's an actual insult. I don't think it was ever used as an insult.
No, no. No, I always thought it was a nice little bonding thing for the two since it started in Caretaker, but it never, I don't know. It's kind of strange because it didn't totally stick, and yet it was still sort of there. One of those weird things where they couldn't decide what they were going to do with it, if anything.
Now, there was just now, there was smoke behind Chakotay in the dock. Where's the smoke coming from?
I guess Sandrine's has a smoke machine. I don't know. I noticed that too. And I guess maybe it's for atmosphere. Maybe it's coming from the fire.
Oh.
A candle blew out.
You're totally right. It's probably from like a candle or the fire. You're right.
Now, was that intentional? That's the question.
Yeah. So, okay. So, Janeway's hair right now. You're the hair expert.
Yes, I am.
Is she wearing a wig?
Oh, absolutely. That is, Bun of Steel is very much a wig.
Is the Bun of Steel always a wig?
Almost. When they get into the later seasons, when they do the throwbacks where she has to wear the Bun of Steel again, that I don't think is as much a wig as it is more just like hair pieces and hair extensions. Like they're using Mulgrew's real hair and then they're adding a little bit of a hair piece. This is definitely a wig, though.
Okay.
And I have to say, the Bun of Steel is in fine form in this episode. I mean, look at that. It's standing about 3 inches high.
It is voluminous. I feel like we're back in the 60s.
Mike, like, holy cow, I've tried to do the Bun of Steel many times, and I cannot get my hair to stand up that high and not look ridiculous.
It's practically a beehive.
Pretty much. Yeah, I really want to know the trick to the Bun of Steel. How did they do it?
24th century technology.
And a wig, which is much thicker hair than what I have, which I think is the secret, sadly. poor Chakotay. I love this scene.
Yeah, this is literally my favorite part of the entire episode. Like, just the subtleties when, like, he's looking away, even how he tugs on his ear. He's just like, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I guess. Yeah. You're not giving me any choice. All right, let's go. Poor Chakotay. I feel like occasionally that was Robert Beltran in general on the set. Like, oh, probably. I'm stuck on the bridge again. 5 years later? Okay, let's just shoot it.
I remember we came up with rewrote an episode, and it was Unforgettable is what we rewrote.
Uh-huh.
And that's hard to say. And we had a scene at the end. I can't remember if it was me or you, but we had a scene at the end where Neelix and Chakotay are talking about love, you know, and Neelix gives that fantastic speech that he gives about love. And from there, we had Chakotay and Neelix kind of develop more of a bond. And I kind of wish that we could have seen seeds of that, even though it was our own creation. I wish we could have seen seeds of that in this episode.
Right? Yeah, because really, I mean, they're going to have a moment here where they're talking about love. And that would have been great.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So there's a half-naked man in engineering.
I don't know. How embarrassing is it really in the 24th century to walk in on somebody in their underwear?
Well, I don't know. I mean, humans are humans. I know in Futurama, they always tried to say that in the 30th century or the 31st century, they didn't have ancient 21st century notions of modesty. And then the professor just like wiggled off his clothes.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay, one thing I absolutely love, besides the dialogue, because this is good dialogue here, I think. They both have tricorders in hand. Trying to figure this out. It looks awkward. It's funny. It's not really helping them.
What do you mean? How so?
Just, I don't know. Maybe it's just my own notion. Like, tricorders are for away missions, and they're on the ship, and it's not really doing them a whole lot of good, and they're just... It's sort of like how people will walk down the street with their iPhones and they're just staring at it the whole time, not paying any attention. It sort of reminds me of that. I don't know. Yeah. I'm going off on a weird tangent. It just looks odd to me.
I love it.
That's a great quote.
What?
Jealousy's fear of losing somebody we love.
I love how even in this conversation, Chakotay is, like, even though, like, Neelix is, like, just complimented him by calling him handsome and that women must find him irresistible, Chakotay is still annoyed with Neelix when he says, it's like, have you ever been jealous? And he's just like, ugh, of course I've been jealous. It's just the ugh, I'm done face that he constantly has is hysterical.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of like this 18-year-old kid asking a 45-year-old guy these questions. Oh, and there's your favorite guy. He's back.
Oh, I think this is his last episode, right?
Is it? It might be. I have a hard time remembering if he's back at all for anything. Like, I don't know if he's maybe in the background when they're stranded on the planet in Basics or something like that. Maybe we see him there. But this might be the last time he has a speaking lines.
Yeah, I can't remember. You're probably right.
Yeah. I don't know. We're going to have to go back and watch now.
He's just so busy working out so hard.
Well, right, yeah. If you just find him in the gym, he's there.
So did we see Tuvok leave the bridge?
No. No, the last time we saw Tuvok, he was on the bridge and he was doing resting Vulcan face.
Why? Okay, why would he leave Aiella in charge just so he could go out and search? Shouldn't there be a senior member of the crew on the bridge in case of an emergency?
That's kind of what I've thought the whole time. Yeah, this was really poor judgment on Tuvok's part, especially if people are having difficulty. Yeah. Tuvok didn't go to command school.
Yeah, it's just like, well, the captain and first officer are lost. Even though I'm third in the second officer, maybe I should just, I'll head on out and I'll put somebody who's not even on the roster, really.
Yeah, I'll go find him. I can do it, sure.
I can do it. Just go ahead. I got the ears for it.
Yeah, no. Now, of course, if he had not left the bridge, we would not have a great moment later in this episode. But, really poor judgment on his part.
I love that when Neelix disappears, you can practically hear Chakotay go, oh, thank God.
Yeah. No big loss.
Now, they always complain about how Jeffrey tubes are so small and that right. They wish that they could stand up upright. In Next Gen, we actually did see some Jeffrey tubes where you could stand up upright. Isn't that correct? Like in the Outrageous Okona or whatever the name of the episode was?
Oh,
no, it wasn't Okona. It was not the Okona. It was the Super Soldier
episode. Oh, boy, you're really jogging my memory. I need to watch some TNG again. It's been a while since I've watched most of them. I'm not sure.
And people listening at home, maybe I got the names wrong. Maybe it wasn't a Jeffrey's tube. And if you know the correct name, let me know. I could have sworn that they were, and I would remember being shocked, like, what? Those aren't Jeffrey tubes. They're upright, but maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. It could be, but I don't know, so I will not say.
Never a dignified camera angle.
It's kind of a cute moment in the scene. I like how helpful Harry is here. But prior to this, they've had actually kind of a cute moment where Janeway says to him, you've been one of the bright spots of this whole mission, which it's cute.
Now, okay, so they had like one of those little handle things that suction onto the door so that she could pry it open. And those were just, that was at the door frame. Yeah. So you could use it if you needed to. If they knew if they knew so much that it needed to be a fixture, why didn't they just build that into the door?
I'm not sure.
Put a handle on the door so that no matter what, it has something that you could pry open with.
I don't know. A security protocol, maybe? Like, if you have an intruder on the ship, you don't want the handle right there. You have to have them find it. Yes, if they don't know. I mean, that's a huge apologist explanation, but there
you
go.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, I need to get out of here. I'm a bad guy. Oh, thank goodness I'm not going to slightly look to the left.
All right. So it's not the greatest security measure, but it delays them for a whole second. Could be the difference between life and death.
I had forgotten that she doesn't get weird and lightheaded right away. Like, she actually had a couple of seconds where she's like, what the hell was that?
And then the migraine came on just now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Took a moment.
See, I want to see how Harry, like, grabs Janeway. What he has to do is, like he has to grab Janeway and pull her through the Jeffrey's tube.
Yeah. Poor
Janeway.
We
don't see that. Yeah.
I think we didn't see that for a reason.
Yeah, because it would have been freaking difficult.
Oh, yeah. And probably very awkward looking as well.
I love it. It's like if you're not going to mop the floors, and he's not going to make love to me.
Right. Poor Sandrine.
This is before the addition to his program.
You think he's a Ken doll here?
I think so.
Hmm. Now, I'm pretty sure... That was not real. She was totally helping him out. It looks bad.
I had never noticed that Kes was holding her head like a newborn. Just
hold the head. Got to protect the head. Yes.
I remember
now
seeing
it's annoying.
I remember seeing a comic where we saw Spock and Kirk with their communicators out, and they went back in time to our present day, and everyone surrounded them, and they're like, "Oh my God, what is that? Is that a walkie-talkie? Is that it can only make calls?"
That's funny now.
And that's all, yeah, that like when I saw Chakotay and Tuvok holding the tricorders, that's all I thought about was just like the screen on the tricorder is like an inch square.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, teeny. Right. Whereas we have 6-inch iPhones now. Yeah, I don't know. I noticed that Robert Beltran is doing a certain face a lot in this episode, kind of where he kind of does like the kissy face. He sucks in his cheek just a little bit and then kind of puckers his lips a little bit.
I have not noticed that.
He's done that a few times in this episode. Maybe
he just did it right there.
Yeah. He's doing it a lot. That and the ear. He's grabbing his earlobe a lot.
Yeah, I've seen it like 2 or 3 times now. Yeah.
It's like a semi-Chakotay trait. He'll occasionally do it, but he does it a lot in this episode.
The warp core is looking particularly beautiful today.
It is. Very nebulous. Yeah. As we were saying earlier about the Jubalian fudge cake.
Did we ever find out how that effect was made?
No, I don't know how that was made.
I don't know how it was made either.
I bet it's on Memory Alpha, but
it has to be.
Yeah. I have not taken the time to find it and or read it. If I figure it out, I'll let you know.
So I think this is the moment, you know, we got 16 minutes left. We're almost about, you know, like 30 minutes in. I think this is probably the moment where we lose most people.
I have to agree. The part where we see things from Janeway's perspective, or is it just the thing of, oh, they're lost still. They're nothing is happening.
Yeah. It's just kind of like, we're like, oh, they're lost again. And all we have is the only action that's happened is Janeway passed out.
Yeah. I'm actually surprised more people, like say when Tom and B'Elanna beamed from engineering, they didn't beam themselves into, you know, the parts of the ship that are all distorted.
Yeah. Yeah. Or in space.
Yeah. And also, we didn't get any real semblance of like a mass freakout from the rest of the crew. Do they know what's going on? Did they just let this thing envelop them? Like, oh, okay, well, I guess nothing's wrong and I didn't hear anything. Or were their messages just all distorted, sort of like how in the beginning, you know, phenomenon, and they just went off into nowhere and we just didn't hear about it.
I think that would have been real. I never really thought of that before, but that would have been really interesting to see in this episode where we see other people kind of freak out where it once we actually see that this wave is coming in. We see it actually envelop people and they freak out and get trapped in it. And so we have a little bit more fear. Oh, also, before we go on, like the ship that they're showing right here where it's all kind of like meshed and warped and weird and everything like that and distorted. The amount, I always thought that they kind of wussed out on the amount of distortion that they should be showing, because according to this, it's just like, oh, the corridor goes slightly to the right instead of straight on.
Right.
And, like, according to them, you know, like, people's quarters are in engineering. You know, they take lifts to the bridge when they're actually trying to go to the cargo bay. And even, like, Tuvok went behind Chakotay but then went in front of him. And so, technically, it should all just be, like, one big swirl of a ship.
Yes, you're absolutely right. This thing should be a mess.
Yeah. It should be, like somebody mixing paint. And you're seeing the red mix in with the blue. And yes. You're just like, oh, holy crap.
Right. That is why engineering is meshed with the quarters now of the guy who was in his underwear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, really, the only real freakout we get is here where they're trying to decide what to do now that they're all kind of brought back into this one central location.
Yeah, we have Janeway do her deaf impersonation. And then we have...
Is that what it is?
And it kind of sounds that way, and I'm not saying that to be snide. Like I'm not saying that to make fun of the hearing impaired, but there, like the way that she does it, I feel like that was Mulgrew's inspiration.
Really? I never thought about that at all. I just thought, actually, I don't know at all what the genesis of how she, yeah, we could go down there, but we won't. I don't know how she came up with what she did, but I never thought about that because, I mean, everything she hears is really distorted. Mm-hmm. I never thought of it as hearing impaired.
Yeah, like take a listen this time. And, you know, maybe I'm off my rocker, but that's what I felt like Mulgrew was doing. Like, okay, you know, like I need to sound a little different, like there's something wrong. And so I feel like that's where she kind of found her motivation.
Okay, I'm going to keep an eye out now.
Yeah, but we also see B'Elanna kind of have a freak out. Like, really? Is this what we're going to do? We're just going to do nothing?
Yeah, really. Of anybody, she's the one who's freaking out the most. Uh-huh. Which seems pretty apt. I mean, she's got some Klingon in her. She's going to find this thing and kill it.
Yeah, I want to stab it. I want to find this wave and stab it.
There you go.
For some reason, that makes me think of there was an episode of The Simpsons where there was a biker gang who kind of invaded Springfield, and somehow the culmination of the episode is, you know, the biker gang finds Marge, and you know, they try to get help with her laundry, and and Marge is like, well, what have you tried to do to get the stain out? And he's like, well, I tried screaming at it, I tried punching it, I tried kicking it. And sometimes I feel like that's a little bit where B'Elanna's headspace is.
Sometimes, yes.
Megapascals. I knew a guy in school named Pascal.
Did you?
Yeah, he was not Mega. He was Micro.
Micro Pascal. Boom.
Wow, she runs horribly. I never noticed that before, but really? Roxanne Dawson runs horribly.
Which is so funny because we find out later that Torres was on the track team at the academy.
Yeah, right? She kind of like swishes her arms when she runs.
Maybe Klingon athletics is a little different.
Maybe it's been overrated all these years. Maybe that third lung, you know, just makes you swish.
Yeah, there's something to that. Maybe there's some different musculature you've got to do that to really enhance your running. I don't know.
So this is the first time that we see the distortion actually come after them.
Yeah.
Like, we're at the, you know, whatever mark, 35 minute mark.
Yeah. I just noticed this. He's grabbing her shoulder.
He's grabbing her arm.
Yeah. Or not shoulder, her arm, yes.
Intimately touching her arm.
Mm.
So a listener just notified us on Twitter saying that she was able to convert her husband to the JC shipping lane.
Yes, yes. So very proud of her. And congratulations, you have joined a very strong army of relationshippers, 20-something years strong.
This is a very noble fraternity, so we welcome you into our into our brother and sisterhood.
Yes, welcome to the fold. What's coming up, I think, is my favorite part of the episode, where they realize there is nothing that they can do.
Yeah.
And we have the I love you, man moments.
Yeah, it's totally I love you, man moments. Yeah.
They really are. Yeah.
I do like this because Star Trek does this a couple different times. Like we see this a few times where they run through all these options. They try all of their technology. They try all of their smarts. And then somebody says, you know what? Maybe we should try doing nothing. And everybody goes, that's crazy. That's insane. We can't just let it happen. And they're like, right. I don't know about that one. I don't know.
Yeah, like maybe that's exactly what you should do.
And it's always like the science officer or like the smartest person in the room. Like it's going to be Spock. It's going to be Data. It's going to be Tuvok.
Right.
You know?
You've got to have that sage wisdom come through.
Yeah.
Now, implode, is that the right word? Because implode would mean just to cave in on itself.
Yes.
But the ship's not really imploding, it's distorting.
Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe I'm getting a little technical, but I feel like that's the wrong tech term.
I'm fine with it.
Okay. Now, originally, this episode was titled Out instead of Twisted, and I feel like that is the most nondescript, horrible title I have ever heard for this episode. What in this episode says out?
Out? That's so out. Random. That's weird.
I mean, we know that they love their one-word episode titles. Oh, there's Janeway talking. I'm not getting the hearing impaired vibe, but okay.
I hear it as plain as day.
Okay.
I love how B'Elanna whispers that. Like Janeway was going to hear her, like, she's dying.
Right? Don't let her know that, though.
I love that that's his metaphor. Maybe this is one bear we can't wrestle to the ground. It's like, yes. We get it. You're Native American. The writers have made you Native American.
Yeah. And I'm just going to sit here and pout.
I know. I like how she's accepting of it, but she's pissed about it.
Yes.
Like, that's B'Elanna in a nutshell. It's pretty much.
Pretty
you know
much.
What? Fine. Okay, do what you want to do, but I'm not going to like it.
Yeah. Yeah, very much early B'Elanna. Although she really should be taking that china that's behind her now and just slowly either like slamming it on the floor, you know, just in small increments, not really with tons of force, just, I hate this. I hate this. Damn it. I hate you, Chakotay.
That would actually be really, really funny because if, like, we could have this moment where she starts to do this and she's like, what? I'm like, we're going to be dead anyway. I want to blow up some steam. And it's a holodeck, so it doesn't matter.
Right? Yeah, it's true. It's true. Yeah, she's just making this noise and everybody turns to her. What? Could you stop that?
It's not like we need the plates.
I like how the holographic characters are just really not sure what to do. They're just kind of wandering around. Yeah, okay. I'm going to go over here now.
Yeah,
this is the I love you, man moment.
I'm surprised that they had it interact, this wave interact with holographic material the same way as physical material. Now, granted, I'm sure that that's because they needed the set, you know, like that's where they started the episode. And they're just like, oh, well, we can't have it just deactivate the holodeck because then they wouldn't be able to see anything distort.
Right. And I'm sure, like, maybe if the distortion of the wave zapped the holodeck or something, I'm sure that would have been way above their special effects budget. It would have looked really cool to see it slowly obliterate, but I get it. But yeah, you would think with it being different energy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's fine.
Now, this is a touching moment. Kes is afraid, yeah. And who does she go to? Doc.
Yeah.
Aw.
There's a lot of great moments. So, yeah, like when Harry and Tom, you know, say that they love each other. And,
yeah.
You know, Chakotay sits down with B'Elanna and Kes and Doc. And we even have that fantastic moment between Tuvok and Janeway.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Now, since B'Elanna tried to kill her spirit guide, how's this going to go down? Is it going to be sort of like a metaphor for this whole episode where she's just trying to chase her animal guide? Like, hey, no, wait!
Yeah, maybe this is where she makes amends with her spirit guide.
Think so? I hope so.
Yeah. Now, look, later in the episode, like in just like a minute, when the distortion first hits B'Elanna, it kind of adds insult to injury because it hits her forehead first and it makes it gigantic.
It does. It does. She would not appreciate that if she saw it.
I always forget that her eyebrows are fake.
Yes, indeed.
But always,
luckily for Roxanne Dawson, she does not have hairy eyebrows like that.
Like I said, there's nothing wrong with prominent eyebrows.
I know you like the prominent eyebrows. And on the right person, they can look really good.
I was mainly just talking about myself, but that's okay. So you're like, look at this. Like her head just enlarges.
Yes, crazy. It does. It's like one of the little fun mirrors, you know, when you go to an amusement park. And here we go. Probably one of the best moments in the whole episode right there. Aw.
Yeah, it's really funny. Like, you know, we as Star Trek fans understand how huge of a gesture that is.
Yes, it's so subtle, and yet we're hitting all the feels because we know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's over.
Now, did you think that was kind of a cop-out to just have it, like, just all of a sudden click, like we have a slow dissolve and then everything's fine?
Oh, what were they supposed to do, though?
I don't know. Show it snap back or something. I don't know.
I don't know. I didn't feel cheated of anything. Oh, tally for the some kind of. You have seen that video, right? On YouTube?
Probably, most likely. If not, it's already in my head.
Yeah, every some kind of documented on YouTube, somebody did it. It's 17 minutes long or something like that.
Wow, that person showed dedication.
Yeah, at least somebody stayed on the bridge.
Right? Like, these poor junior officers are like, where were you?
Yeah, we were scared. We didn't know what to do. You weren't answering hails, and Tuvok left us here all by ourselves.
I love, like, 20 million gigaquads. You can't even fathom that kind of number, in my head, at least.
No. Apparently, Voyager's hard drive is pretty freaking huge. Because we never revisit this data again, right? Until the novel verse, Take a Drink, that does come back. However, we have no idea if they ever tried to sift through all this data. And, of course, it's not like it filled up all of their memory banks, like, where, oh, we can't use this, so we got to use it for something else. We got to empty it. No, they just let it sit there the whole time, which I thought was a really wasted opportunity. If they wanted to really make something of this episode, give it some continuity, something they learned from all that information.
Yeah, and for those of you who are interested, it's in the Voyager novel Protectors by Kristen Bear.
Ah, thank you. And then we're going to come full
that
circle.
Beautiful, beautiful, sultry voice whenever she gets super serious. She's like, I wanted to have something to remember you. Thank you.
Indeed. And that's the episode.
That's the episode.
Yay. Yeah, see, Twisted isn't bad at all.
Little slow, but has some nice, nice, fun moments in between.
I think there's some good character work in there, despite all the walking around and the padding of the actual story they had to do. I think it turned out okay. It's not their best outing, no. But I don't think it gets enough credit either. Yeah. Well, Twisted isn't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
It would be a lot of fun to be able to MST3K an episode like Arena, which, who doesn't love poking fun at a rock-throwing Gorn? I mean, come on, you know?
Can you find a rudimentary lathe?
Exactly. I wrote that on the Babel conference today because Guy Fliegman from Galaxy Quest is the greatest character ever.
Earl Grey.
This 547 meter long, 32 deck, 502 crew member.
That's awesome. To the journey!
Now we go to Once Upon a Time.
Neelix tries to... Warp 5.
If they could have kind of told us, it's more of a future for us, but we're going to build up to the Star Trek you know. And Larry's comment back was, well, that would mean that they kind of were planning it out and they knew what they were doing ahead of time.
Buzzing.
That sounds right. Like Larry.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
I will say, if you want to see what it's really like when someone slices open a tauntaun to get inside to stay warm, like in the real world.
Yeah.
That was the best part of the movie. I'm like, really? Han Solo made it look so easy. This is what happens? This is terrifying.
The 602 Club.
It's about that transformation of getting Oliver to be able to see themselves as something more than vigilantes, but being heroes.
Yeah, and there is a lot of, I like that, because there is a lot in the quote-unquote, as you're calling it, the island story, which the island now is Hong Kong, as you pointed out.
Yeah,
earlier.
I mean, yeah, it's a little bigger than an island.
Literary treks.
Dan, are you sure that flavor isn't something like a green liquid voodoo drink?
Oh, man. This.
Because that could be the flavor that we're going for.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We have new Trek Talk coming to you every single day of the week, and none of this is possible anymore without the help of those of you who help us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/trekfm and consider becoming a monthly subscriber if you haven't already. And we want to especially thank our associate producers who help us out on TTJ, as well as the network on the whole. And those awesome people are Bruce Lish, Aaron Harvey, Jamie Deuce, and Kenneth Tripp. So we thank them very much, and we thank everybody who supports us on Patreon. Another way you can help support us is, of course, via iTunes, and we have two new reviews that came in over the week. We want to thank Juneland and Stevan. That's how I'm going to go pronounce that name. If I did it wrong, please forgive me, but I'm going to put a little bit of a Scandinavian twist on it. Those lovely people gave us 5-star ratings, 2 new reviews, and helped other people find us on iTunes and their weird algorithm and the rankings and all that, boosting us up. So thank you very much for doing that, guys. And you know what to do if you haven't written us a review yet. Go on there, take 2 seconds. It won't take you very long at all, but it helps us out greatly, and it's absolutely free for you to do. So, we have another commentary in the can. We got to move on to next week. What are we doing?
What we're doing next week is something that I really enjoy doing, and that's where we give our top 5 favorite relationship moments, or
Yay!
Friendship moments, and the couple that we have decided to examine is Tom and Harry, because they have a friendship, a bromance, a broship.
A broship? You're coining all sorts of terms today.
All sorts of terms today. But yeah, it's one of my favorite relationships, but you'll have to tune in next week to find out what moments we choose.
That's right. So until then, everybody, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!